Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because we have a fantastic author today, and you won't want to miss his story. And it is a novel, and it's by Noel Annenberg. That's Noel Annenberg. Beautifully and convincingly portrays the engaging tale of a mother's and son's struggles in the 1940s in America. Kirkus Reviews. And the book is called The Dog Boy. And it is an engaging tale of a mother's and son's struggles in the 1940s in America, which we can only imagine, right? Noel Annenberg is a Los Angeles Times contributor and graduate of the University of Southern California Master of Professional Writing Program. Presently teaches a course in fiction writing at Pierce College in Los Angeles. He lives with his wife and their golden retriever, Walter, in the Santa Monica Mountains. And we'll tell you a little bit more about our very special dynamic guest, Noel Annenberg, and he will share his story with you in just a few minutes. But in the meantime, I just wanted to touch base about President Trump. 80 million people plus love President Trump, and people around the world love President Trump. They even marched for him and marched against the impeachments and the election fraud in foreign nations. Amazing. It was amazing. My daughters and I were, and my granddaughter were in Europe, and where my grandparents were born, in Italy. And then again, we went to Spain, and we went to France, and we had a wonderful, beautiful trip, thank God, before this plandemic occurred. People over in Europe, they were so excited to meet us. They were so friendly and caring and kind to us. And they shared with us how they wish President Trump was their president in every country. And they shared with us that they wish they could come to America because America's so free and so great, and they wanted to be free, and they wanted to be able to earn as much money as they want and become whoever they wanted to be. Well, unfortunately for them and us, those things have changed. So we will have to pray and look up and look at God and stop looking at our phones pray for God's intervention, because God can end any nightmare upon the earth, especially in America, because we were founded on a Christian foundation, and so that no one can destroy. They can ignore it, and they can try to destroy it, like the communists have always tried to do, even during World War II and in the 1940s, and they were defeated. They will be defeated again. But here's an article that says, Trump impeachment lawyer: stolen election claims won't be brought up during the trial. And the article says, and it's by the Epoch Times, that's E-P-O-C-H, an attorney to former President Donald Trump said he won't bring up claims about election fraud while defending the former president during the upcoming impeachment trial, who is now a civilian and a citizen and a taxpayer, a businessman, has gone back to his private life. And the Democrats are now coming after him again because they failed in the first impeachment. So now they want to add more to this can of worms they opened at taxpayers' expense. The first one cost us over $30 million, and he was acquitted. And this has been going on into the fifth year now, even after he transitioned and left office peacefully to be an American citizen again. The problem with opening up this can of worms, in my opinion, means that any public official, any public servant who the Democrats or Republicans dislike or hate or target can be attacked and impeached and charged after they leave office, whether it's a former president like Obama or Bill Clinton or George Bush, or a future public servant who leaves office. If they were to succeed at this unconstitutional attack on a former president of the United States who left office peacefully and transitioned out back into the world of regular average American citizens, then they will be opening up a can of worms, not only for themselves, perhaps in the future, but for all future generations. So why would anyone want to become a president of the United States or a public servant if they can be targeted even after leaving office and becoming a citizen and taxpayer and registered voter of the United States of America? That makes no sense to me, and perhaps it doesn't make any sense to you, and I hope it doesn't. And I believe his lawyers are correct. You should just concentrate on the issue at hand and move on and just prove that it's unconstitutional to target people after they leave public office and transition into private life and leave it alone. But that's my issue of the day. And now we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts. My favorite part of the show is the first part of Columbo Chronicles Live, as you all know. And we're going to talk to a dynamic author. And his name is Noel Annenberg. As I said before, he wrote a great novel, The Dog Boy. And I'm going to take a little break, grab a cup of coffee, and let's talk to our very special guest after this important message. So don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe. It is a landmark restaurant, and it is in a crossroads of Tucson, Phoenix, Tombstone, Sierra Vista, many, many different travelers, and a great area for snowbirds that come every year at this wonderful landmark hotel. And it has the largest illuminated ceiling light that is shaped like a horseshoe in the entire nation. It's been there almost 100 years. It has original Merrill's, and everyone loves the food. And that very special old-fashioned piece of apple pie or any of your favorite pies that you enjoy. And so that, again, is in Benson, Arizona, right at the crossroads where you may be traveling. And if you're looking for a special mug for a special friend or family member or for yourself, go to onecupmore.com. That's onecupmore.com, and grab yourself a collector's mug that is a Trump 2020 mug. There's a very limited number left, and you will want to have a keepsake or that collector memory of the most unprecedented election in U.S. history, in my opinion. So check it out. It's whimsical. It's fun. It'll put a smile on your face. It's the Trump 2020 mug that is a collector's item now, and there's only two or three dozen left at this point. So make sure you go to onecupmore.com. And now I'm going to introduce you to a very dynamic author, and he is the author of The Dog Boy, as I stated prior to our ads. And I just wanted to tell you a little bit about him, and then we'll say hello. Noel Annenberg is a Los Angeles Times contributor, a graduate of the University of Southern California, Master of Professional Writing Program, presently teaches a course in fiction writing at Pierce College in Los Angeles, California. He lives with his wife and their golden retriever, Walter, in the Santa Monica Mountains. Let's say hello, and let's have Noel Annenberg tell us a little more about his background, because it's quite extensive and exciting. So let's welcome Noel Annenberg to Columbo Chronicles Live. Hello, Noel. How are you doing today?
Hi. Good. How are you? Thank you for the invitation to appear on the show, and I'm hungry after listening to that the restaurant ad that you just sounds really good, that apple pie.
It sure does, and it sure is. I've been there. So, Noel Annenberg, you are a dynamic writer, and you wrote this novel, and it's, again, entitled The Dog Boy. And I was reading about your background. It's quite extensive. Why don't you tell us a little more than I have told the audience, because it's an interesting background, and you are a graduate of the USC Professional Writers Program, so that interests me and our audience, because many of us are writers. And so please tell us a little more about your resume and your background.
Sure. In teaching writing, fiction writing, and indeed nonfiction, I focus a lot on myth, the mythological structure, as a tool, the engine that we use to keep our stories going. And the essence of mythological structure is basically the story of an ordinary person who is called to do something extraordinary and to overcome extraordinary challenges. And I don't look at myself as a hero, but I do like to map my life out in terms of the hero's journey. I've faced challenges throughout my life. I'd say that really the first major one was as a teenager. I left a very noisy family and joined the Navy at 17, went to Vietnam, and I came back from Vietnam and went to City College, then to SC. Was going to teach and write. My father drafted me to help him in a business, which I stayed in for a good many years, and sold. He'd passed, and I sold it, and then went back to school at 53, where I earned my Master of Professional Writing. And I wanted to teach, but at that time, Gulf War II had broken out. And I I'd really been motivated by the destruction of the Twin Towers to join the fight. I was too old. I, in fact, called a couple of recruiters to find out if they had, like, senior billets, but they don't. They didn't. Then I read an ad that for the Navy College at Sea. All the branches have these programs. Navy College provides instructors for seamen, sailors, basically, ashore and at sea, who want to do coursework. They're actually now, it's a requirement to advance in the military. Now you have to do college coursework to advance. And the military pays the tuition, pays the instructors. Sailors, active duty personnel, have to buy their books. So I signed up for that. It was a way to join the fight. And I went aboard. I met a carrier, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, in Norfolk, Virginia, in early 2005, mid-2005. And I rode the carrier along with 4,999 other people. But I rode the carrier across the Atlantic, through the Med, through the Red Sea, Suez Canal, then Gulf of Aden, and then up into the Straits of Hormuz, and into the Persian Gulf, where the carrier did close combat patrols. They launched sorties of their planes for their troops for support of the troops ashore. And this all the while I was teaching four levels of college English, and I just couldn't have had a better experience. I returned from that, and I've been teaching and writing. I've got a screenplay in the works with a producer, Peter Safier, at Jaws and Scarface, and two novels under my belt, and I teach a class at Pierce College, so I keep myself really busy, and I'm really pleased that I have this opportunity to speak with you.
Oh, well, I'm very happy that you're speaking with us, actually, and, you know, that's extremely important that you shared that information with us, because it's so important that we recognize our heroes. I believe all military people, personnel, are our heroes. And my family was, my dad was in the Navy, and my uncles were in the Army, and other cousins and friends and so forth. So to me, they're very special people, and all the veterans as well. And on your book, which your novel, The Dog Boy, so interesting. It says that December 1945, Fozzie Mae Eaton leaves her home in Galveston, Texas, to visit her son, Will, a wounded U.S. Marine, fresh from combat on Iwo Jima, now in a Los Angeles military hospital. Eaton is stunned to discover the racial rules and regulations that extend to war heroes. Why did you write that? What happened in your novel?
This particular novel is autobiographical. I wrote it as a peon to Fozzie Mae, who was actually raised me as a little child. My parents were mostly absent without leave, and so she really raised me, and I, you know, like a little duck, she imprinted on me. I learned a lot of life's lessons from her. And this was a book that told the story of my family and my childhood through her eyes. And to do so, I basically had to, imagine a story for her, and I took real events, and I created additional characters and placed them all into these real events, and I wanted to write the book as a way of telling my story and telling her story.
That's really would appear to me to be very difficult, and so you did this excellent work, this excellent piece for people to read about, because racial issues are still being revealed with this plan. I call it a plandemic, and the targets they're using, saying that the blacks must be vaccinated first, the medical people must be vaccinated, the elderly. So they're still targeting groups of people today. So I find your book extremely fascinating from the 40s. You say her beloved Will is a house in a colored ward, separate but not equal from white soldiers, where he is balancing precariously between life and death, as a festering gunshot wound in his stomach is infected. So what is happening to your character here?
Well, he is part of the very first in the modern era. There were black Marines during the Revolutionary War, but in the modern era, there were none until Eleanor Roosevelt petitioned her husband, if you will. There was going to be a railroad porter strike, and the railroad porters, all blacks, petitioned her husband because they wanted to join the fight. They wanted to fight for their country, which was extraordinary because they were still living, most of them were living under Jim Crow, but they still believed this was their nation, and they wanted to join the fight. Will was one of the first. He went to Iwo Jima. He was wounded during the fight for Iwo Jima, and they shipped him back. The problem that Fozzie May ran into was upon his arrival in Los Angeles, it was discovered that he needed penicillin, but there were no colored needles to treat him with. And the reason there were no colored needles was because of our victory in Europe and the ensuing celebration where all the soldiers, there was venereal disease epidemic because of all the celebrating. And so all the needles, all the extra needles went over to Europe. And in that time, you know, blood and all those medical blood and all sorts of medical components were all strictly segregated. So there were indeed like colored water fountains and white water fountains. There were colored needles and black. So she received, Fozzie Eatman receives a telegram. Her son is literally critical in this hospital. Her employer, landlord, gives her the money to take a train, and Fozzie comes to Los Angeles and discovers that her son needs penicillin, but she needs to go to war with the War Department and the U.S. government because there are no colored needles. And the book is the story as it unfolds. She gets to work with a beautiful courtesan who was my mother under an assumed name in the book. And the mother has a little boy, me, and the little boy is now in a single parent home. His parents split, and he was the mother had given his dog away, and he had in psychology what's called a hysterical reaction, meaning he assumed the identity of the dog and he was barking and nipping at everybody, and the mother would have a date over, and the little boy would run up and bite the date's, you know, shin or pull on his trousers, poop on the rug, you know, just acted like a puppy. So she took him to a shrink, And the shrink said, well, if he's going to act like a puppy, treat him like one. This being psychiatry in 1945, and put him in a cage. So when Fozzie arrives to this new job, she finds him in a cage and, is astounded by this. And then she has to find these needles and find a way to work with this white courtesan and her shell-shocked brother, Marine brother next door. And as the story unfolds, you see these people from very different backgrounds. The word is diverse now, but these very different backgrounds who are come together in the wake of World War II, and they have to find their way together to survive, and that is their challenge as heroes, if you will. And what's turning out to be really interesting for me is that as our government, the long arm of our government, infringes on our individual liberty, which it's doing more and more every hour, almost, with the president signing all of these orders, executive orders, et cetera, the diversity training and all that's going on. My book is a tribute to people, black, white, there are all sorts of people in this novel. It's a tribute to people who are finding their way and working with one another without government interfering with them. And they're basically relying on their freedom and their own abilities, not the abilities of a big mommy government to make them do things in accordance with government policy. These are people that were on their own, having to find their own way, and that's what really energizes me about the story, because I'm a great believer in the sanctity of the individual. And that's really right now under tremendous threat.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I was very intrigued with your book, The Dog Boy. And it's a novel by Noelle Annenberg. And I'm very intrigued mm-hmm. with it because in the past, people, my parents, your parents, grandparents, whoever, struggled and they didn't actually complain about it. It was just part of life as a free person with liberty and rights guaranteed to them to make their way in life and make their choices and their free will granted by God, not by Biden and the Democrats or the rhinos or the GOP, whoever, or the Communist Party,
mm-hmm.
Who set themselves up now as the dictators of our country and are denying us, as you said, our liberties. And Biden even said before when he was vice president, that ruling by executive order is a dictatorship and doesn't reflect the American way of life. And now he signed more executive orders than any president of the United States history in just a week, it
yes.
was. And he's still doing it. I mean, give him a pen, boy, and take the pen away is more like it. But I think
mm-hmm.
your book reflects that this is the real America that developed our country and made it great, because they would figure out ways to survive and to work with each other, and to no matter what ethnicity or race, or we wouldn't be all together today as Americans fighting back for our freedom against this, what I believe is tyranny and abuse of power. So your book is so timely right now, Noelle, and I just love the fact that you mentioned penicillin, because penicillin was so popular, and nobody ever talks about it anymore. So doesn't it work anymore? What's the issue with penicillin?
Well, it's a root antibiotic. I mean, so many antibiotics have evolved out of, you know, from that original discovery. But it's still a potent antibiotic that's used for certain strains of bacteria. So it's not dead. I mean, it's just that there are so many other choices. There's more specific.
So in the book, you also say that miraculously, Mrs. Lucille finds needles for Will, but the hospital administration will not allow their use for safety purposes. That's totally discrimination. And so what did they mean that for safety issues and purposes they could not use those needles?
Well,
in your book, did they have a reason other than they just said it was for safety purposes? Or was it totally racial?
Well, go ahead. No, well, definitely racial. However, I don't know if anyone of your listeners has ever tried to. I walked into a Starbucks and I wanted them to heat a drink for me to zap it in the microwave. And the health department rules were such that they couldn't, because it was going to be a violation of health department rules. And I now even, I think that would even be more of a critical issue, that, you know, people aren't going to handle anything that you've consumed, you know, started consuming. And back then, she went head on with basically bureaucrats, the nursing staff, et cetera. And they were basically dismissing her need or claim because she was black, and because they had the authority. And there are still plenty of people, you know, who would rather than act like a decent, you know, compassionate human being, they would fall back on regulations and allow someone to die because of a rule that, you know, was meant to be broken in a case in a moment like that.
That's a very good analogy, an excellent analogy. And so in your book, did any biracial marriages take place?
Yes, but I don't know if I can't tell you, because then I won't, you know, people won't buy the book and read it. But yes, there is one.
Okay, well, I just was curious about that, and I'm sure other people are curious too. We won't tell you what happens, but it's there, folks. And so is there any love, violence, sadness that's going on during these times in your story?
There is, within this group of people, there's love, there's anger, there's hope, despair, there is divine punishment, if you will. There's a little bit of everything. There's mute, there's song, there's a fried chicken recipe. I think I put that in, Fozzie's fried chicken recipe. So I threw it. There's everything in there. it's about the human, you know, it's about the human condition. And, you know, on Amazon, there were certain people that reviewed the book that, you know, took exception to the fact that I wrote it in this black woman's voice. Well, my view is that when you're writing about somebody, you know, at our core, we're all human. Now, there's good and bad. There are good and bad people, examples of all of us, you know, good whites and bad whites and good blacks and bad white blacks. But at our core, you know, we all have the same human needs, you know, air, food, water, place to live, shelter, clothing, and of course love. And we all have those needs, whether we live here or in Bangladesh or wherever. And So as an author, I'm exploring the needs of people, and I really, you know, their color or their age or their locale affects their struggle. But core, we're all the same people, and we're all after the same, we're all basically the same needs we're trying to fulfill. And some of us get perverted and we go the wrong way, you know, but we're all after the same thing. One of the things that I'll share with you is early in the book and early in my relationship with Fozzie Mae, I was originally very frightened of her, this black woman and this chocolate lady. And I hid her shoe under our house. And I remember this so clearly. I was like 3 years old, and I hit her shoe, and she scolded me a little bit, you know, and she said, "Don't you do that again." And so I had a fork and I poked her with it. And yeah, I know. And she scared me. So she took me in the house and she took out a sewing needle and she put it under a flame, and she poked my finger and squeezed it and drew out a little blood. And then she squeezed her own finger and she said, "You see that, what color that blood is?" And I said, "Red." "And you see what my blood is?" "Red." So she says, "You have to realize something, child, that all our blood is the same color. It's all runs red. And we're all the same inside." And that was a lesson that, you know, I've carried with me my entire life.
Yes, that, and it's true as well. And I think, you know, it's fantastic that you wrote this novel, The Dog Boy, because no matter, you know, everybody has their opinions, but I believe that it's part of our American history and that it affects everybody. It's been a struggle for everybody, not just for the black people, but all ethnicities that came here. And as the melting pot to come, because they all wanted the taste of freedom. They did not want to be suppressed and killed because they protested or spoke out against their government, or they wanted to be what they wanted to be, earn as much as they want to earn, and have a free choice, a free will. And so they all came here, and they're still coming here, and they're still trying to get into the USA. But I believe in legal entry. I don't believe in illegal entry at all. I believe in upholding the Constitution and knowing who is entering our country. And they want to know everything about us, but they don't want to know anything about the illegals. It's amazing, but in today's world. But anyway, besides all that, the point is that these were the struggles of those times, and there's still a struggle today, which is amazing, in a different way. And although we've made a lot of progress, I still think it's important for people to understand what was happening in the past and why men serve their country, mostly men back then, serve their country. And then there was the volunteers, the female volunteers, who also helped with the war, and why we fought communism, and why we try the best we can try to end racism in the USA and not discriminate against anyone. But we'd, like you said, we don't need the government to be our mommy and our daddy. And that is what they're trying to do now under this regime. So why, in your heart, do you think that you wrote this book? What is the most important thing that sticks out in your mind as to why you decided to write this novel?
It was to honor Fozzie Mae Eatman, definitely. And there's another layer to that. It was to honor her, but when I started writing the book, I needed a narrator, and I tried different narrators. And she came up as the best narrator because she knew everyone's story. so it just made sense that I didn't have a grandmother who knew everybody's story. She did. So I told it in her story, in her voice. And other thing that I want to mention is that, you know, especially for a fiction writer, fiction is the highest court of appeal for in the human condition. For the people who feel that they've been treated in unjustly, that were dealt a bad hand, that were abused or whatever, in fiction, in the pages of fiction, a writer can build or find justice by rewriting the end of the story with those people. And a writer has the freedom, you know, to kill any of the characters that deserve death, cripple characters, throw them out, bring them in. For the writer who wants, who's writing for a sense of restoration of justice, if you will, fiction is a great vehicle, because we are the judge and the jury and the prosecution and the defense, and we bring all these people into our court of fiction, and they had better be on their best behavior, because, you know, we can do what we will with them.
That is so true, and that is an excellent,
and I do that.
Excellent piece of information for writers to understand. And so, would you like to see your book made into a movie? Because I could actually visualize it as a movie.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to.
And who would you want to star in your book, The Dog Boy?
Well, I love Viola Davis as Fozzie. Viola Davis is such a wonderfully inspired actress. And the work she's done with Denzel Washington, and it's just amazing. And for Miss Lucille Goldberg, who's the courtesan, Ruth Wilson. And for Leo Goldberg, the estranged alcoholic husband, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's a great actor.
Yeah, so if any of them are listening, I'm available by phone right now.
Very good.
And
so as we wind this up, please send any message you want out, and also because it's your time to shine, and you have about 60 seconds to do that, and then let them know if you have a website or where and how they can purchase your book.
Sure. So my website is Noel, N-O-E-L-A-L-A-N, Allen, Noel Allen Annenberg, ANENBERG.com. You can also look at InsideWriters.com. That's my writing website. The book, it's available on all the platforms, Apple and Barnes & Noble, most readily available on Amazon.com. And when you look up the book on Amazon, you have to look at The Dog Boy by Noel Annenberg to zero in on the book. If you just look at The Dog Boy, you'll get a lot of hits that are related to, but not the novel. So you have to add my name, Noel Annenberg, to the search in order to find the book. And, you know, I enjoy hearing from my readers, and I enjoy taking questions about writing, which you can send me through the website, and I invite all of your listeners to contact me if they have questions, etc. and that would be wonderful. I'd love to hear from them.
Fantastic. And I just want to thank you so much, Noel Annenberg, for being our very dynamic guest today and for writing the novel, The Dog Boy, and sharing as much as you could about your wonderful book. I hope everyone gets a copy and goes to Amazon.com and to your website and sends you some messages about maybe they have an idea or they're writing a book and they need a little information and help. And so on that note, you have a blessed day and much success with your book, and hope to talk to you in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm headed to Arizona for a piece of apple pie, so I'll see you later.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Noel Annenberg has left the building, and his book is The Dog Boy. It's going to be a very, very special book when you read it because it has a little bit of everything. And the 1940s, everybody likes to read about what was happening in the 1940s because our history is being erased. And these are stories that you can actually know actually were happening, even though they're written in fiction. And everybody loves that. So on that note, we'll take a break, and then we'll be back in just a moment. So don't touch that dial, and we'll enter into the world of politics.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right, listen up, because we are live right here at Columbo Chronicles. And we're going to enter into the world of politics, which you know I love to talk about. And on the Insider, there's a very important website I came across. It says, China is currently experiencing a boom of production for medical equipment, in particular masks. The price of basic surgical masks has increased from about 30 cents to 70 cents since the pandemic began. China is making mega bucks from America and the world, who they unleashed a biochemical weapon on the world, and now they are making mega bucks. And all investors in the mask are making mega bucks. And now they're asking you to wear two or three, because heaven knows this monster is going to get you. It's real, but 99.8% recover, according to CDC. And if you look up the statistics as I did, there's not very many more people who live or die from past years compared to 2019 to 2021. The difference is there's hardly any difference in the number of people who have died worldwide, and in the USA, more people have died from heart disease, lung and liver disease, cancer, diabetes, accidents, hospital errors. But everything is now only COVID. That's it. Nobody dies from anything else, according to CDC, WHO, Gates, Fauci, Biden, the entire federal government. Only COVID. And they also, doctors say that they are counting tests as cases, and tests are not cases. But that inflates the numbers. They are counting every patient as COVID. They are counting every death as COVID for the most part, for those nursing homes and hospitals who are doing that, because they get a financial incentive for every case, every patient, every death recorded as COVID through Medicare, which means that you, the taxpayers, are paying for that as well, for that financial incentive. Why are they doing that? That is the question you should be calling your congressmen and your senators and asking. So I read an article that said a cabal bought 18 million masks and they made $151 billion. This appears to be the new medical big pharma COVID industrial complex, making billions. And I saw a graph online, I looked it up, and it showed how much money and profits CDC and WHO and other nonprofit agencies had made and over the years in profits from vaccinations. And it just continued to increase with new each vaccination. And now it's a multi-billion dollar business. So what is this really all about? And now China's making tons of money off of America and the rest of the world, who unleashed it. So why are we buying masks made in China in sweatshops and testing kits? Do you trust China? Communist China, the CCP? Since the beginning of 2020, 38,000 new companies in China, not in America, in China, have registered to make or trade face masks. In all of 2019, there were 8,594 new companies. And they're shutting down companies in America. They're shutting down middle-class businesses, destroying them. I drive down the street, and I'm telling you, every time I drive to family to take care of my family and drive home, there are more businesses shut down, big businesses like Lowe's, a 7-Eleven. Very, very rare do you ever see a 7-Eleven shut down. Spas, salons that have been there for years in an area I grew up in, gone, wiped out. Shopping centers, for lease signs. I live near an industrial complex. First time I have ever seen so many signs for lease. Big companies. There's more to this than meets the eye. China's making out like a bandit. They unleashed the virus. There are no more deaths that are unprecedented or unusual from the past years through 2019 to 2021 in the world and in America. So why are we locked down? It's a flu. All flus are linked to coronavirus. According to Dr. Shiva, we have 22 trillion viruses in our body. That's why God gave us a nose and a mouth. He gave us a nose and a mouth not to cut off our oxygen and to breathe back in carbon monoxide that causes loss of focus, according to doctors, and it can cause fainting, it can cause death, it can cause problems for your body, and fresh air is not getting in through your nose to help keep your brain healthy and your body and your lungs, and then exhaling the carbon monoxide back into the environment. That's how God made us. And it keeps our immune system strong when we eat healthy foods with vitamins and minerals and supplements that keep our bodies and our immune systems healthy, which the doctors recommend, that are censored. They're not allowed to talk about it. They're censored by social media. MSM doesn't talk about what's healthy to eat to keep your immune system healthy and strong, or maintain a healthy, strong immune system. That's why God gave us an immune system. And that's why he gave us vitamins and food supplements and healthy foods to keep our bodies healthy and our immune system healthy and strong, including sunshine and fresh air. In the 1918s, during my research, they say that the health department stated after it was all over that people were dying from pneumonia, they were dying from TB, not just the flu, and that they didn't have clean water, they didn't have doctors and hospitals on every corner, and they didn't have heat, and they were dying from malnutrition because 60% of the population was undernourished. So when they're holding back healthy foods in the markets and locking down America and the trucking industry, and they're destroying the farms while Bill Gates is buying up all the farms with Monsanto to plant GMO non-nutritional seeds, and the billionaires have been buying up, including the Bush family, all the reservoirs and water supplies, the renewable clean water supplies and the sanitation water supplies. What do you think is going to happen in the future when they control all the food, all the water, all the farms, all the ranches, and they want to get rid of the cows, the chickens, the pigs, the horses, the dogs, etc.? What do you think is going to happen? Well, we're locked down and being impoverished and imprisoned in our own homes as a free people who are the government. And we're allowing to be run as a dictatorship by executive order, not by a democratic system of three branches of government who are only concerned about their own bank accounts and about insider training. Nancy Pelosi has just been alleged to make bigger investments with Tesla because they want to get rid of all your cars and force you into public transportation or bicycles and into electric cars. Well, they killed off fossil fuel. How are they going to run the electric cars? Well, Biden just signed off on fossil fuel, denying oil, denying fracking, denying coal. Hillary and Obama and Biden all said they'd bankrupt the coal mining. And what did Pennsylvania do? Pennsylvania refuses to do an audit. So they're okay with losing their coal mining jobs. Oil companies, what are you doing about it? Are you filing lawsuits? What are you doing to protect your industry and all your jobs? Unions, you're all Democrat. What are you doing? Look at this union school teachers. They don't even want to go teach the kids that's in school anymore. They just want to stay home and collect those unemployment checks, I guess. Why don't they hire substitute teachers who want to work and teach children? And children are being depressed. They are getting more depressed, more suicidal. There's more drugs, more alcohol being used today because of the lockdowns. There is nothing good about the lockdowns. I don't know where in the Constitution it says that the government can imprison Americans in their homes for unlimited time, for an unlimited amount of time, and deny them human rights, civil rights, constitutional rights, and the right to operate their own businesses and the right to work so that they can legally, lawfully, constitutionally, state and federal law, sustain their lifestyle and the necessities of life, which include shelter, food, travel, work, education, medicine, and clothing. Where did they grant themselves, the CDC and the federal government, who has limited powers to act as law enforcement against the American people, and then target 80 million Americans who didn't vote for the Democrat Party and lock everybody down in their home and force them into poverty while these multimillionaires and billionaires are not concerned about their families and sustaining their lifestyles, or they're not worried about how they're going to keep a roof over their head because they own mansions and live in people like Bill Gates, who laughs about the vaccines and you have no choice, and he and Dr. Fauci are so wealthy. Do they care about saving lives, because more lives are being destroyed and more suicide is happening, especially among young people, and more older people are dying from loneliness and isolation. And more families are being destroyed because of the lockdowns. Is that saving lives? Or are they creating their vision of controlling a world without 50% or 90% of the population left to enjoy the rest of their lives? Well, anyway, that's my comment for the day. God bless you. God bless America. God bless our military. May they save us from what's happening. I don't know if they will, but it seems that the only hope we have now is the American people waking up and saying enough's enough and taking back their government peacefully, legally, constitutionally, and the military stepping in and arresting all of the corrupt New World Order members who are destroying our nation, trampling on our constitutional rights, our civil rights, and our human rights, and our right to work and our right to sustain our lifestyles. It's called the Necessities of Life Laws. And they are forcing a needle to be plunged and be assaulted with unknown numbers of chemicals and possibly aborted fetal tissue and other materials that is unprecedented and new, and they have no long-term case studies on the direct adverse side effects on every individual, because every individual has different health issues. Every individual is a different race, ethnicity. Every individual has different sexual preference. Every individual has their own medications they're taking or implants, whatever. And every individual is different, and every individual reacts differently to a new medication or a new vaccine. And it is my opinion that it is grossly negligent to force a new medication or vaccination on the entire world without being responsible to assure through a 5 to 7 year long-term case study that those vaccines are safe for the majority of people on the planet, and to deny them their free will and their free choice, because that's granted by God, not by the New World Order. And on that note, I have to say, see you next Wednesday. Talk to you next Wednesday, God willing. Bye-bye.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.